Coming up on today's show,
a lot of people like right now are dealing with that whole like the grind culture, right? You know, like you got to get up every day. You got to be doing so. Yeah. XYZ every day, every moment of your day, which is great to have like a good work ethic, but it's not great when you're trying to keep your sanity.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Los Angeles, my guest is a vocalist, songwriter, bass player, engineer, and producer who has worked out of some of LA's most renowned studios. She has worked on projects with artists ranging from Brittany Broski to Elisheva Lilla to Moral to Still Motions and more. She is also an Ampeg artist and is also part of the alt-punk, hardcore, indie rock band Control. She has even worked for Warner Music and Atlantic Records. You have been hearing a song by Alexa Villa that my guest co-wrote and co-produced called Lose It. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Gigi Zimmer.
Hi, Bruce. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. And let's get started, Gigi, by having you tell us first all about the song that was just playing during the intro called Lose It. I said in the intro that you co-wrote and co-produced it, but please elaborate on that work as well as, since I was talking over it, tell us what the song is about.
Yeah, so I co-wrote and co-produced that song with my friends Jack Ritter and Alexa Villa. They are incredible collaborators, and, you know, that song just kind of came about very naturally. We were having a good time, and that's kind of what the whole premise of the song is about, is just, you know, we're gonna lose it and have a great time and not worry about anything. So I had a really fun time creating that with them.
Was that a case of y'all were sitting around and you knew you were writing this for Alexa?
Yes and no. We kind of kept it open. It was let's write this for Alexa, but, you know, whatever the song becomes, if it's not for her, then that's fine. Let's, you know, maybe someone else will connect with it more.
Would you say that someone kind of already had the idea for it, or the title or the hook, or it just kind of evolved as everyone sat around and talked about it?
It just evolved. And, you know, a process that I use a lot in songwriting is, you know, we'll have a mic, we'll just kind of, usually it's one person, sometimes two or three, but, you know, one person will kind of start doing melodies or like words, whatever they're hearing in their head. And that was the case with this one. Alexa was on the mic, you know, singing her melodies, and then I'm singing out loud and Alexa hears something, or Jack heard something cool, and like I grabbed the mic and just started singing the hook of it, which was Lose It, Don't Make Me Want to Lose It. And my vocal is in that track. We ended up just keeping it because, as they say, the magic happens on that first take. So we ended up keeping those vocals, and I did a lot of processing on them, so it didn't really matter that it was with a like one of my cheap mics. so, you know, it kind of worked out.
I like that. I like that. I'm waiting for you to say that someone grabbed a guitar or someone was sitting at piano.
It was a bass, actually. I don't know if it was me or Jack. It was one of us. Was just playing that main like bass riff. When you're writing, I feel like you'll hear something sometimes and then everyone will just be in agreement. It's like, oh, that's sick. Like, we need to run with that. And so that's how it kind of started, was off of that, the bass line, which is also pretty typical for me. I usually like to start on bass of some sort.
Okay. Okay. You read my mind. That was going to be the follow-up. Let's do some background setting. I said that you're calling in from Los Angeles, but is that where you're from originally? And for that matter, how did you get your start?
Yeah, so I'm not from Los Angeles originally. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, and I've always been involved in the music scene. And when I got into high school, I started playing bass, and that I wanted to play in bands. And, you know, all my friends and I were like, we're going to be the coolest people ever. We're going to have a band, and we're going to be huge. And that's what we're going to do. Which didn't necessarily pan out for that group I was in, but it did, you know, pave like a path for me to doing the work I am now. I didn't have any work lined up in Los Angeles. I just felt like I was hitting a brick wall of some sort, and I just felt like I just needed to leave for a bit, and if it didn't work out, I could just come back, you know? So I figured, why not give myself a shot, at least? And so I made the decision to go ahead and move out here, which was, it was pretty rough for the first couple months, but I got very lucky, and I ended up meeting someone who introduced me to the people who worked at Atlantic Records and their on their record label side.
Hmm. Wow, that's a classic case of results not typical, because number one, just because, but number two, yeah. I think you're saying that you kind of moved out to Los Angeles, I don't want to say whimsically, but in other words, I'm not hearing you saying that there were a bunch of people that you knew out there or that you went out there with somebody. Is that the case? Did you just kind of go out there cold?
I essentially went out there cold. I went out there with someone that I was seeing at the time. And so I wasn't completely alone, but I damn near alone. Didn't have any like connections to anyone really. I mean, I had a few like people I knew, but it wasn't, I wasn't close with them. I wasn't super in touch, I guess, with them. So it really was just I hate saying the word a grind, but it really was.
I'm sure.
I was meeting as much people as I could. You know, I worked at a pizza shop for a bit, and I was not happy. I was so miserable.
Wow.
But I needed the money, and, you know, I still believed in myself. This was only within the first couple of months, so I wanted to give myself at least a year or so, and yeah, luckily I met this guy Itai, and he introduced me to you know, the folks over at Atlantic, and then that's kind of how I started working with the label. Up until this point, you know, I started based off of, you know, being in bands and, you know, wanting to record rock music and punk, whatever. So for me, when I started working with the label, I didn't even realize this is going to sound really maybe stupid, but I didn't really realize that engineering was like a whole separate job, because to me, all the producers I had met also engineered. So to me, like, a producer engineer was like the same was the same role.
Okay.
And that became very apparent that was not the case.
So let me jump in with some questions here, because I think you went out there, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you went out there saying, I want to be a player. Like, I've been playing bass here in Arizona, but I'll probably get more gigs. I'll probably be able to play more if I move to Los Angeles, right? You weren't going there thinking that you'd be on the production side. You were planning to just continue as a musician.
Yeah, mainly continuing as a musician, and then, you know, also continue productions and just writing for people. So that was my biggest, like, I guess, push was, you know, being a musician and producing more songs for artists.
So when was this that you moved to Los Angeles?
It was the beginning of like 2022. It was still like kind of in the middle of the pandemic. It might have been 2021, but I remember the pandemic was still pretty heavy. Like, there was still a lot of lockdowns, and not a lot of places were open. And if they were, it was like limited hours, and you can only wait outside, you know.
Wow.
So
That
made it a little bit difficult to meet people when everything is shut down. So.
Yeah, and trust me, I had this silly grin on my face when you started to say that, you know, there were some people out there that you sort of knew, you weren't in a real regular contact, but all of a sudden, you kind of look in the mirror and you go, I live here now, and if I'm going to get this career off the ground out here, I all of a sudden need to call those people anyways and say, hey, what's going on? How you been? I know it's been a while. And then kind of shift into sales mode. Like, what do you got for me?
Yeah. No, exactly. And I think something that helped me was when I stepped out of the mindset of like, it is sales, but I initially was like, I just want friends and I want, you know, I want to feel good. And that was kind of my biggest push. And I think just in general, like when you're not just, you know, climbing up the ladder, versus like reaching out like to the people like next to you is you'll get different results.
So what happened at the label that you went from kind of thinking I'm going out here to write for people to continue as a player, and all of a sudden you're thinking like, oh, maybe I could also work on the other side of the glass doing production. What took place that pointed you in that direction to start getting your feet wet in that area of the business?
When I saw the studio that Atlantic had off of, it's not there anymore, but it was off of Cahuenga in Hollywood. You know, I saw like their setups, and I just chatted up with the guy who had booked the room for us, and I was like, oh, like, you know, do you guys like record a lot of artists out of here? Like, I didn't realize that this was a thing. And he was really kind and, you know, told me about like what they do there. And I just kind of asked him, I was like, do you guys ever hire people? Like, how does that work? And that, looking back, that could have been like a little bit, not presumptuous, but could have been seen as pushy. But I just came from just curious, because I did not know that that kind of job was really like a thing anymore, like studios having staff and engineers and all these things. Like I guess it just never really occurred to me, even though I did go to school for music business and audio production. But for whatever reason, that just, I think because I started in such a rock heavy world where producers did everything, and you don't hear about like engineers like being like its own thing. I was just kind of like, oh shoot, like maybe I could like work here, like this could be kind of cool. And you know, this was, you know, during the pandemic, the studio was like pretty much shut down, like they weren't really allowing sessions to come through.
Wow.
So he's like, you know, I'll talk to my studio manager and we'll see what we can do. And I was like, okay, cool. And you know, a week went by, and there I was visiting Arizona, and I guess there was like a miscommunication, and they were like, oh yeah, we just don't have any spots available, but you know, we'll keep you in mind for the future. And I just remember being in Arizona like so devastated, because I was working at the pizza shop, I was so miserable, I had no friends, and just I felt so defeated. I told my parents, you know, I'm gonna go back to LA a day early, because I need to figure out like what I'm gonna do, because I can't keep working here, and I just need to feel better. And so they're like, all right, yeah, do what you need to do. They've always been super supportive. So I came back out, and the next morning I got a call again, and they're like, hey, there's miscommunication. Actually, they are looking for someone. Can you come in right now?
Oh.
And I had just gotten it. I had just gotten back home like,
wow,
you know, maybe a few hours prior.
Wow.
So I was like, yeah, I can. I still live pretty close to the studio, so I was like, I can be there in 5 minutes. They're like, all right, cool, come through.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
But you know, I backing up, I admire you being honest enough to tell him like, oh, this is a thing. Like, do they hire people, or they're, you know, and for him to also be nice enough to say, well, you know, I'm not sure I can ask, especially at a time when he could have just told you, you know, what are you kidding me? You know, the pandemic, we're not doing much business. If anything, they're getting rid of people, they're not hiring. So I love that story from both sides, you know, that you just went ahead and asked the question, and he was kind enough to kind of, you know, give you the lay of the land, and lo and behold, it ends up the way that it did. I wrote a blog recently on my website saying that the expression new economy just needs to be a thing of the past at this point, meaning it's a damn rare thing when someone is just doing one thing these days. In your case, Gigi, tell us about wearing multiple hats. I imagine there's no such thing as a typical day, and that on any given day, you absolutely could be operating in different roles.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's constantly changing. Every single session, even throughout the session, you know, your needs in the chair are going to change. And I think as time goes on, you know, you get better at kind of anticipating what someone's going to want, which makes your job easier. And it makes them happy too, when they don't have to say everything that they're thinking. So yeah, like switching between like technical, or not even technical, but you know, I'm wearing this hat as like a producer, but I'm also engineering. So how am I going to juggle like wearing these two hats? And realistically, one always takes over. When you're producing, I feel like you're mostly focused on like the production. You're not really concerned about the nitty gritty technical things of like, oh, there was like a hum in that last take, or other things like other sounds that pop up. Like, I feel like sometimes I just kind of skip over that because I'm like, no, this take was perfect. I can deal with like there being like some weird hum happening from a car driving past or like things like that. But when I'm in my technical headspace, it's a lot like, hold on, pause for a plane, or like things like that, because my I have a home studio that I've been building out, and you know, I love it so much, it feels so good in here, but it's also not the best sounding room, so I do have to keep that in account, which took a little bit of adjustment from working out of studios that are very well treated, and you just don't really have to worry about anything other than maybe the sub from a studio next door or something.
I feel you, because here I've got carpeting, I've got acoustic panels, I've got this place so just catered to having that kind of sound, and then yet I'm such an audio snob that I'm like, but the damn window though. And so I'm still, as recently as a day or two ago, I was looking at like 4-inch foam to push in the window. I'm like, I got to just order this and try it. And anything's got to be better than it is now. So yeah, certainly, you know, the different roles that you're wearing make you more sensitive to different things, but I'm fascinated by you being able to get into a groove in certain positions and say, you know, right now I'm just doing this. I'm not thinking of, I've got that hat off.
Yeah. Cause sometimes, you know, if you can get the idea down and you can always revisit it, if you're, you know, like, oh, we can get a better take of that, or that was just scratch vocals. But, you know, if I was only worried about the technical side, I feel like that can really just get in the way of the creative process, you know. Something this engineer taught me was, you know, we have to move at the speed of creativity. And so I feel like when I'm being creative, I got to move quick. And sometimes, you know, the technical stuff will fall to the wayside, but I can always revisit that, you know.
I love that expression.
Yeah, no, it's a great expression. Ryan, that's Ryan. He's great.
Audience, last September when I was in Los Angeles, I went to Playback Studios and I sat down with engineer, producer, and writer Shan McMullen. That's episode 609. If you never heard it, I'll put a link on the show page for Gigi's episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. She told a very similar story about working with Atlantic Records and the long, long drive that she was making from like basically San Diego area. So not too different from what you heard Gigi say. Very similar story. Folks, it's quite a different sound from this week's guest, but I do hope you heard last week's episode with young Alex Miller, who was on season 19 of American Idol and made his debut on the Grand Ole Opry just over 2 years ago. During that interview on this show last week, I revealed upcoming quote-unquote tour dates of mine, all as part of my ongoing quest to meet listeners of this show face-to-face, so I can say a personal thank you for the time you give to Now Hear This Entertainment each week. On April 18th, I will fly to Las Vegas and be there for 8 days and 7 nights, flying out on the night of April 25th. I will be attending the NAB show, and I have got 3 interviews lined up for future episodes of this show. Plus, I will be meeting with my client who lives in Las Vegas. podcast@nhte.net is the email address for this show. Use that to let me know if you will be there then so we can meet. Plus, you can also use that email address for a mailbag segment that I would like to do, reading your messages on an upcoming episode of the podcast. I look forward to hearing from you and hopefully meeting you. Gigi, I mentioned your band in the intro, but please do tell us all about Control.
Yeah, Control. It's me, Anissa Rodriguez, and Daniel Shapiro. Anissa's on vocals, Daniel's playing guitar, and I'm playing bass. Daniel and Anissa had reached out to me about like October of like 2024. And they reached out to me. They told me about the band and sent me some songs, asked me if I'd be interested. And funny enough, Anissa and Daniel were both in bands that I really admired growing up. So for me, it felt very full circle when they reached out. You know, I kind of felt like, oh man, like this is, I'm actually doing it. Okay, cool. And I just got really excited to be in a band again. You know, that was the whole reason I even started this musical journey, was to be in a band. And it, you know, over the years it shifted, which is fine. I think sometimes you have to do that. But I was just so excited to be in a band again, and more so with music that I really love and music that I'm really passionate for. So it's been, it's been about a year and a half now, and I think we have like 10 or 12 songs completely done. We only have two released, and we'll have another one coming out probably in about a month or so. So a lot of exciting things rolling out with them in the coming months that I can't quite yet share, but you know, hopefully if you follow along, you'll hear about it.
I was going to ask you if there's live shows being planned, if there's, you know, projects above and beyond, quote unquote, just recording and releasing. I don't know if you're able to even answer the live shows question.
Not yet, just because I haven't gotten approval to really talk about it yet. So
okay.
I'll hold off right now, unfortunately, but we did play our first show back in the beginning of December, and it felt so good to just play on stage again. That was my first time playing since right before COVID with my my post-rock band, Still Motion. Yeah, it was a long time. I did not play live with anybody. I was in the studio or doing, like, I would do, like, front of house, like, events in Arizona and stuff. Events, shows. But, yeah, really excited to join a band again. That just felt like I was achieving my dream as a teenager, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, when you talked earlier about the high school band, all I could think of is that band probably thought they were going to take over the world. They didn't. They may not have even taken over Arizona, but now here's the chance for Control to take over the world.
Exactly. And, you know, Anissa and Daniel are also from Arizona, but we didn't actually form until we were all out in Los Angeles, which I also think is just kind of funny. But yeah, it's been so fun, and I'm really excited for the songs we're about to release, and, you know, the few that we have out already. So
nice.
We'll see where it takes us, but, you know, I've based everything off of feelings, which I don't know if that's a great thing, but, you know, in my head, I'm like, if it feels right, then it's the right thing to do.
Well, and there's so much about what you said that makes it sound like this was meant to be. So I would probably have that gut feeling if I was you as well.
Yeah, always trust your gut.
I do strive to have one or more teaching moments on each episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. And Gigi, you have certainly done a lot in the business. So I would love if you could maybe share some lessons that the music industry has taught you the hard way.
The hard way. You know, this industry will chew you up and spit you out, and it will test you in ways that you never could have imagined. But as long as you continue pushing towards whatever it is you want to do, and you remind yourself why you started, you know, you love music, you love whatever it is, you love playing, you love being a part of, like, management, you know, whatever the case is, you got to remind yourself of, like, why you start, because, you know, it can be pretty cruel out here, and it can be very tough in the industry in general, not just in Los Angeles. But, you know, I had multiple moments even within this last year where I'm like, do I keep doing this? Like, this is tough. Like, my limits are being tested. And every time I had those thoughts, something beautiful would happen. Like, I don't know if this is maybe me just trying to hang on to any, you know, dream I have of it, but I had, like, won a guitar in a raffle at my friend's show. It's a beautiful Epiphone. And then I'd later on, like a week after that, I had found a acoustic guitar on the side of the road.
Whoa.
So those two things happened, and I was like, you know what? I got to remind myself why I did this, because me thinking I shouldn't do this anymore, and then, you know, the universe, whatever you want to call it, putting these things in my hands and being like, you know, maybe I was just taking that as a sign to keep going. And so, and I'm glad I did, because every, you know, when you push past those moments of doubt, those, you know, self-limiting beliefs that a lot of us carry, you'll realize that you're doing a lot better than maybe you thought.
And I think you saying that sort of answers the follow-up question that I was going to ask you. As you said, I've had moments that have really tested my limits. And my knee-jerk was to think, oh, tested her limits of like, hey, there's only so much I can do, like all this work, someone's going to have to help me out. But I think you're saying tested my limits as far as my patience, my ability to put up with, you know, some of these things that the business is throwing at you and saying like, oh my gosh, do I really want to do this as a career?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like you, waiting on invoices, people not responding to the things that you're, you know, maybe trying to help them with. But the biggest thing was for me was, you know, you get into these back and forths with like labels or management companies of like not paying you and, you know, kind of running you through the ringer of, oh, well, we sent it to finance, so it should be another week. And then a week goes by and then you don't hear from them. And, you know, that was like a huge thing for me to kind of get past. And, you know, or people saying, okay, we're going to work together. And then you do a song and then, you know, whatever, it just doesn't pan out. And you're like, frick, what am I doing wrong?
So what about the fact that you are in Los Angeles? I mean, I'm sure that the guy or the gal in Albuquerque, New Mexico has his or her fair share of challenges. But do you think, Gigi, that the fact that you are in a major music market like Los Angeles does make it absolutely that much more trying?
I think in certain ways, yes, just because there is so much work happening out here with music that, you know, you can get overwhelmed with like, oh, I don't have enough time to do this. I bit off more than I can chew. I'm sleeping 4 hours a night and I am about to lose my mind.
Mm.
And the fact that Los Angeles is just a very expensive city to live in. Those two things alone, I think, are what make it, well, the city being expensive makes it difficult, but having a lot of work is, you know, is nice. Seems like there's never like a shortage of work necessarily.
Mm. Thinking back to the earlier conversation about wearing multiple hats, what are you chasing right now in your work?
I've really been chasing the production and songwriting. I really just want to work with artists that are down to, you know, create something that feels good. And that's kind of my goal with productions is like, I want to make this song just feel good. Like whatever genre it is or whatever, you know, emotion you're trying to elicit, whether it's sad or happy, like it needs to feel good, if that makes sense. Like I feel like that can be a little bit of a paradox, you know, like a sad song that feels good, but it is a thing.
No, I get it. You write it and you say, wow, I just wrote a great song. This is amazing. I feel so good about it. And P.S., it happens to be, you know, a ballad that people are going to cry their eyes out over, which is exactly what you intended when you wrote it. You want them to feel right. Something. You want that emotion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, music is ephemeral. You know, it's always fleeting. So, yeah, I think chasing the feeling is more important than anything. Which is also why I don't get too caught up in like mixes or anything. You know, I used to be, oh, this mix sounds like really bad. But then, you know, when you think about it another way where it's like, okay, well, maybe on a technical standpoint, this mix isn't good, but it feels good.
Hmm.
So that counts for something.
Interesting. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line by vocalist, songwriter, bass player, producer, and engineer Gigi Zimmer. Find her on Instagram and Facebook. Plus, you heard her talking about her band, Control, and they are on Instagram and YouTube, and their music is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and other digital music retailers and streaming platforms. Be sure to stay with Gigi and with Control for announcements on the details that she cannot reveal today. I was mentioning the Las Vegas dates earlier. However, I realize I cannot be everywhere, and so in an effort to connect with audience members in locations I will not get to, I invite you to join me online for a virtual coffee. On my podcast website, nhte.net, there is a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button that will allow you to do exactly that. Well, you can buy more than one if you are so inclined. You will see others before you who have done so, the messages that they have written to me there, as well as the replies that I posted back to them. It is a nice way for you to let me know that you appreciate the work that I am doing with this show every week, every month, every year. Gigi, earlier I mentioned that last week's guest, Alex Miller, a country artist in Nashville, is quite a contrast from what we are hearing today in your episode. I wonder, how do you approach working with different genres or styles?
Yeah, so working with different genres and styles is something that I actually, when I first started, I didn't realize how much differently like things needed to be like mixed to fit a certain vibe. Like I was trying to mix all my vocals to be like rock, you know, you want like some body to it and, you know, you want it to feel like it from their chest. And then I would go to record a rap session and they're like, cut all the lows. And if you listen to that in solo, it sounds crazy. Like the vocals sound super thin. And so I'm thinking, this is wrong. This can't be right. But it in fact was right. Usually in a lot of rap or hip hop, whatever, you do cut like a lot of the, and with like EDM pop music, like you tend to cut a lot of the lows. So I think when I'm approaching different genres, I think that talking period before you even begin is pretty important to figure out what is this artist or writer, whoever, what are they trying to achieve? What are we trying to achieve, I should say? Are we going for something that's like sultry R&B and, you know, you want to have some of that body and that chest and the vocal? Or are we doing something hyper pop where I can cut all the lows and just completely do a bunch of crazy effects to this vocal and make it sound cool? You know, that you kind of have to think about what you're trying to achieve beforehand so that way you can make the right moves while you're working. Because sometimes, even though I think for this is for a lot of producers that I've spoke with, even though you know you may not be mixing the song, you still have to get the song to sound the way, like, pretty close to what it's going to be in the final. So you do end up kind of pseudo mixing, I guess. If I don't know if that's the right term, but yeah, you kind of do have to know a little bit about whatever genre it is you're trying to achieve to, you know, create the song that you're trying to create. You know, I think it was Rick Rubin, I don't know, but some producer was talking about a song being like a block of marble, and you're chipping away as, like, you know, producer, songwriter, you're chipping away at this block and the song will reveal itself to you.
So I'm curious, taking a step back, when you said that you just kind of came into it thinking, oh, well, this is how we would do it with a rock song, and you had to learn that that's not the same approach with every genre, with every style. Who taught you that lesson?
It was the head engineer over at Atlantic, Ryan Glideau. I briefly talked about him earlier with the Move at the Speed of Creativity. He's the same guy who said that. He came into one of the sessions after we were done and, you know, he wanted to listen to what I had worked on, and I was showing him, and he's like, okay, you know, the recording sounds good, but you need to, like, do it like this to make it sound how they want it, how they want to hear it. And I just remember being like, what? Like, that doesn't sound right, though. And he's like, it doesn't matter if it sounds right in solo, like, in with everything in, it sounds correct. So that was kind of like a head tilt moment of like, what? And then being like, oh, wow, how did I not know that? But that's what experience does.
We've kind of talked around this, but I'm curious as to your approach to technical versus creative balance.
Yeah. When working with a label, I really only had to worry about the technical aspect of things. You know, is the recording clean? There's no, like, weird sounds happening. Like, I only had to worry about that. The creative mindset, when I was working like outside of the label stuff, I was doing so much technical work, like, day in and day out, that when I started getting back into my creative headspace, it took me a minute to kind of get out of it because I was moving too slow. I like couldn't get out of the headspace of like, there was like a car passing in this take, like, I got to do it again.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden I've, you know, spent all this time just working on a verse when I could have just not worried about that, like, in that moment of like, whatever, like, let's just get the song written.
Yeah, or even, you know, making a rough demo at home. And again, you are focusing too much on trying to get the production aspect right. And it's like, no, I just need to capture the idea. I just need to get it in the ballpark. Kind of like you were saying, you know, a producer still has to sort of think like an engineer. It's stifling your creativity to go, well, hold on a second. I'm not sure that I like the way this setting is right now. Just come on. Just create. Just capture it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, and sometimes, you know, the technical stuff gets set up beforehand. Like if you're drum tracking, like you might spend the first couple of hours getting drum tones and hearing different snares and different mics on things. And then once you're out of that headspace, you can say, okay, cool. That was a cool fill. Like, can you add like another flam, or can we do, you know, this type of fill here? And then you can get into the creative stuff and you don't necessarily have to worry too much about like the technical aspect. But even still, that can get tricky because, you know, sometimes when you're drumming, like I've worked on tracks where I'm recording drums and like the mics will get hit when we go to take a break or something and it like moves a little. But if I'm not like paying attention to that, and then I record the rest of the song with it being, you know, not correct, that definitely bites you in
the
butt.
Wow. I would very much like to hear your industry perspective, as would, I'm sure, the aspiring performers who are listening to this episode.
I've spoke to so many of my friends about this, who also work in the industry, and there's a lot of scary things happening, and there's a lot of things that, you know, we're not sure of, you know, especially with AI coming out, and that, you know, some of those AI songs sound ripping, sounds awesome. And that's the scary part, you know, like, but I think the human aspect, maybe it's just because I've been doing it for so long, I can hear a song and be like, okay, that's AI. Like I can hear these weird little inflections happening in the vocal or whatever it is. So that can be kind of scary, but I think in ways, you know, I feel like the industry is as easy and it's so accessible right now than it has been in the last, you know, maybe even 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
Wow.
And all that's due to social media. Like I can Instagram DM a big artist and they might hit me back. And before that was not the case. You'd maybe need to find the management or hit up the label and then, you know, hopefully you hear back. Probably not. I don't know. Luckily, I didn't have to deal with that. I just, you know, DM people on Instagram and boom, a session set up. That's how I've met a lot of the people I'm working with. I just shoot them a DM. I'm like, you know, I love your music. I feel like we could make something cool. If you're down, let's do it. And that's proven to be pretty successful for the most part. You know, people are very down to collaborate. And that's, I guess, kind of the cool thing about the industry right now. And even with all these things happening with AI and, you know, the industry is, there's a lot of us out there doing it. But I wouldn't be discouraged about it because everyone has their own taste and, you know, music is subjective. So what might not be cool to you could be the coolest thing to someone else. So but yeah, the music industry now, like, I feel like is so easy and accessible. Like anybody can get into a studio. Anybody can start recording and writing music now. Like they have, I think I just got an ad for Logic on an iPod.
Oh gosh.
So, you know, you don't need a lot of things to get started nowadays. You can start just with whatever you have. And that's kind of why I was saying earlier, you know, it's sometimes when you're starting out, it's better to reach out than to reach up. You know, reach out to your friends, reach out to other people who are maybe in the same boat as you, rather than trying to reach up to, oh, I need to work with this artist because they're big, or I need to work with this management because they manage XYZ. You know, sometimes it's better to grow your roots out.
But I love that after everything that you just said and how accessible it is, and that, yes, nowadays there's so many people that are trying, emphasis on the word trying, to create music at home. And yes, everyone wants to argue about streaming, and sure, AI is very much in the conversation. I love that earlier on, you talked about how busy you are. So all these things that people think are taking down the music industry, clearly there's plenty of work, as you're testifying to, and that's the good news. As bad as people want to paint it, there is the glass half full view, which is, well, there doesn't seem to be any shortage of work out in LA, at least.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as long as, you know, you stay active, you know, I still go through periods where, you know, I'm not engineering as much, I'm not producing as much, but there's still things for me to be doing. And I think if you change your mindset from, a more like positive outlook of like, okay, like I'm not getting a lot of work right now, but that's fine because I can practice and I have more time to practice and I have more time to write songs for myself or, you know, watch YouTube videos of producers or, you know, even just enjoying the time off because it is kind of feast and famine at times. You know, there are times when it's super busy and times where it's not, but as long as you kind of keep focus, even if, you know, maybe it's drifting a little, like some weeks I'm practicing more, some weeks I'm producing more, like as long as you keep the momentum, you won't really have a shortage of any work to do.
Yeah, the scarcity mindset will get you nowhere, but on the outside looking in, and there's times on this show when people will talk about, I get to go and play a gig Friday night, I get to go and do this writing session tomorrow, instead of I have to play this show Friday, I can't do that tomorrow, I have to go to this writing session. No, you look at it as, instead of scarcity, you say, okay, well, I don't have that much work right now. That means I can finally practice. That means I can finally write more. That means I can finally insert rainy day list item here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm sure it helps that you do wear multiple hats. At the same time, though, how do you stay inspired and avoid creative burnout?
Taking the time off when needed, you know, not overdoing it. And so, and it's so easy to overdo it. Like last week, I pulled a 16-hour day and I was absolutely exhausted. I slept like maybe 4 hours before I had to go back and do it all over again. And yeah, it was brutal. But, you know, the following, there was like a day or two after that where I didn't have anything going on. So that day I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to do my laundry. I'm going to like go on a walk. I'm going to play Animal Crossing and just like not think about music or anything creative. I'm just going to kind of zone out from it. And I think that that really helps when you do get back into it, or, you know, even the next day, right? You kind of feel like you have a fresh mind, and I feel like it also helps with not feeling so bitter. Mm. So I've noticed that with people sometimes it's really easy to get bitter and just pissed off at the industry or at the world. But I think taking the necessary time off really, really does help with not burning out and noticing in yourself, like when you're getting more frustrated or, you know, like, oh, I'm really tired, like giving yourself that time. And I think it's hard because, you know, a lot of people like right now are dealing with that whole, like the grind culture, right? You know, like you got to get up every day. You got to be doing so. Yeah. X, Y, Z every day, every moment of your day, which is great to, you know, maybe get into have like a good work ethic, but it's not great when you're trying to keep your sanity because it's very easy to overdo it. And yeah, noticing when those moments happen and being like, okay, it's okay to take a step back because you will actually be a better person in the studio for doing so.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
You talked earlier about Atlantic Records, but in the intro, I had mentioned Warner Music. When and what was that?
Yeah, so I initially started working at Atlantic Records in their Cahuenga studio. I was with that studio for about 4 years, and the studio shut down. The label didn't want to fund it. So instead of just dispersing our team, like Warner and you know, still people at Atlantic, like A&Rs, like these people there still saw value in us, even though like they couldn't afford to keep the studio anymore. So they said, okay, let's transfer you guys under Warner Music. And now instead of just doing Atlantic projects, you're going to do Warner Chapel, Warner Records, Atlantic, 10K, like all these other sister labels, I guess, or, you know, under the umbrella, you know, they started putting us with more people in their other divisions.
Wow. Fantastic. What advice do you have for people creating at home when it comes to the temptation to go down a rabbit hole of trying every switch, every knob, riding the faders, you know, when they get new software, new plugins, meaning that, sure, you want to maximize your purchase and learn it, but there's the likelihood that you need to find the sweet spot, not spend hours and hours and hours with some elements that you just might never use. What are your thoughts on all that, Gigi?
I think, you know, you give yourself like a little bit of time to, you know, maybe want to dabble with the sound really quick. I think that's fine. But honestly, So I might get a little bit of crap from this, but I really do. I'll mess around with presets if I need to, just to see if, especially with effect plugins, you know, just flip through and be like, oh, let me see really quick. And usually I end up finding something that's sometimes perfect, usually not, but so most of the time it gets very close, and then I can say, okay, sick, I'm going to keep it here for now. Mm. I'm going to revisit this, or, oh, this is really close, let me make a couple adjustments, and then boom, that's what I was hearing. So I think some people want to knock the presets, but I actually do think they can be very helpful to just moving quickly and, you know, and also learning more about whatever plugin you're using. 'Cause you can create a lot of different sounds with these plugins, and but a lot of people will only mess with maybe a couple of them. Like the Valhalla reverb, for example, you know, a lot of people just mess with like the decay time and maybe the, like the mix, and sometimes the EQ gets touched, but no one really messes with like the diffusion rate, the size, like all these other aspects that can really change how the reverb sounds. Mm-hmm. But no one wants to spend time doing that like nitty grittiness, especially if you have someone in the room with you who's like writing as well, or, you know, is in the zone with you. You just want to find something quick, or, you know, have like a list of plugins that you know how they sound, you know how to get a certain tone out of them, and then just start there. And then later down the line, like that happened with the Lose It track, I had a completely different bass tone that we had just started with, just to, you know, get things rocking. And then by the time the mix process came, we were like, you know what, let's change this a bit to make it feel like just different. So, and that's when you can spend the time getting into those rabbit holes of, oh, let me try this. Let me try this guitar amp with this into, you know, whatever other effect plugin. You know, you can go into those rabbit holes at that point. But
except that's when you look at the clock and you go, oh my gosh, is it really 2:20 in the morning? I got to go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, oh no.
But, you know, this does kind of come full circle with what you were saying before of those times of scarcity and the things that you can be doing instead of complaining. That's when you say, all right, you know what? I downloaded a dozen plugins last year, and I think I spent time with like two of them. So this is my chance to finally roll up my sleeves with the others.
Exactly. Yeah. And then sometimes you end up finding like your favorite plugins during that time, or that then become, you know, your most used, or the ones that you kind of gravitate towards. So, yeah.
So I hope you understand the difference in this question from earlier when I had asked you, what are you chasing right now in your work? But instead, as we get set to wind down, I'm curious, what is next for you?
I think the next thing for me really is to just keep learning, keep growing. But no, my biggest thing really is just to keep growing, and as an artist, as a producer, maybe honing in what my sound is as an individual, and, you know, just continuing on that path and trusting whatever comes my way. If it feels right, you know, just go taking the leap and doing it. Lately, it's been pretty consistent with just, you know, producing, engineering in the band, and we'll continue on that. And I know the band stuff is going to get a lot busier here in the next, you know, next coming months, and, you know, throughout the year. So, yeah, just gearing up for that shift.
So I guess as a point of housekeeping, we should cover, in case there's anyone listening, that you talked about Instagram and using it to contact others. Can people go the other way if there's people listening that say, I think I'd like to work with this Gigi Zimmer, she sounds pretty cool. Are the DMs open? Can people contact you? And I take it you'd be willing to help people remotely, even though you're in LA, they could be in Nebraska for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yeah, my DMs are always open. I check them pretty frequently. By all means, please go ahead. I'm always happy to help anyone in any way. You know, that's the whole reason I feel like I am where I am, is not only my drive and my work ethic, but because people were so kind to me throughout, you know, this whole time I've been in the industry, to help me, you know, give me advice and say, you know, maybe you should try this, or, you know, whatever the case is. So I'm absolutely so down to help anyone, even if it's not like with a production thing, you know, even if you don't want me to produce or do anything like that. Like if you just have questions about whatever it is, you know, I'm always happy to give my two cents and just try and help in any way I can.
Wow.
I think that's what awesome. Makes it a community.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome. We are going to close today with a song from Gigi's band, Control, a track called Cesspool. Before I let you go and we play that, tell us all about this one first, if you would please, Gigi.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So Cesspool was the first song that we released as a band. We pretty much had like, I think we had like 8 or 9 songs. The songs were written, but we only had, no, I don't even think that. I think we had like 4 or 5 done that we knew we wanted to like potentially release first. And we kind of honed in on Cesspool being the first one we released. And I'm very proud of it. It's, we all did it ourselves, recorded the drums and the vocals, guitars, all that is all done by the band. So I am just so incredibly proud of it. And I'm so excited for the stuff that is about to happen. But the song will give you a little taste.
And even though I'm not going to talk over it, we are going to play the whole thing. Just give us the story of Cesspool.
Yeah, so Cesspool is like, it's more so a song about like getting kind of lost in just the bullshit of life. You know, you're stuck in this like haze or this fog, or based off the name of the cesspool, you know, you're stuck in this like just disgusting rat race of life. So that's what the song, I guess, is about.
Awesome. Awesome. Gigi, great stuff. I knew it would be. Thank you ever so much for being on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed the conversation.
No, thank you so much, Bruce. I really appreciate it. This has been great.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to vocalist, songwriter, bass player, engineer, and producer Gigi Zimmer. Again, find her on Instagram and on Facebook. I have followed her on both, and I'm sure she would appreciate you doing the same. Be sure to tell her you heard her on Now Hear This Entertainment. Her band is called Control, and they are on Instagram and YouTube. Plus, their music is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and other online digital music retailers and streaming platforms. That will do it for episode 634. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with a song from Control. This is the one Gigi just talked about. It's called Cesspool.